to Healthcare IT Today. I'm John Lin, together with my colleague and friend, Colin Hung. The world of technology and healthcare are ever-changing in new and novel ways, and that's why we love this stuff so much. So join us as we discuss the latest healthcare and health IT news, meshed together in new ways which help generate ideas and new perspectives. Plus, we'll have a little fun along the way. On today's episode, we'll be talking about value-based care and the technologies associated with it. Today's episode is sponsored by NextGate, a provider of EMPI solutions. Learn more about NextGate at nextgate.com. And be sure to follow the show on Twitter at the hashtag HITSM and our personal accounts at TechGuy and at Colin_Hung. Plus, check out our 13 years of Health IT blog content at healthcareittoday.com. We're back with some more value-based care. This is a hot topic.
It's been a hot topic for a while, but yeah, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into it today, John. I'm looking forward to it, as I always do on these podcasts. It's always a lot of fun.
There's a couple. You're like, no, I don't think I want to get on there with John.
There are some days I admit that, but no, I'm just saying. Today is not one of those. Today
is it with John or just on the podcast? I'm just going to tell myself podcast. You don't have to answer that.
Today's going to be a good episode. So what we're going to talk about is who are the players in value-based care? What IT behavior is actually being driven by the movement to value-based care? And then we're going to talk about some of the interesting technologies that you and I are seeing that are coming in for VBC. And then we're going to have a little bit of fun and debate, you know, the question of, will we ever get there? Can we really truly get to 100% value-based care? I think we both have, we'll have some interesting perspectives on that. So let's go ahead and just dive right into that first question, John. So who are the players in value-based care?
Yeah, I mean, so to me, the biggest player in value-based care is the people paying the money. That's where, you know, they say follow the money, and in healthcare, it's a challenging one because it's such a complex environment. So at the end of the day, for me, the payers are the biggest ones that have to drive this home. But unfortunately, they've kind of passed that buck to the provider organizations who, quite frankly, haven't executed it that well. And so because of that, and there's plenty of reasons why. I mean, you know, they're having success in the fee-for-service world. Why do they want to shift to value-based care? So, but I think we see employers even pushing really hard on that respect. And really trying to push towards value-based care because their premiums are going up and healthcare is costing them so much money. That's becoming a big thing. And then I'm also watching the ACOs. I think we're still early in the discovery of what an ACO can do and what the right structure for an ACO is. But I think once we figure that out, I'm still a little bit out on this. Like, are we going to find out now? You just can't do it. Or are we going to find out, oh yeah, this is a model that works really well. Let's spread it across the rest of healthcare.
Well, it's interesting you say, John, you know, follow the money, and that the person paying the money, you know, should be the biggest player in value-based care. I agree with you. Although I think over the years we've lost who that is. And ironically, you know, I think with the movement towards value-based care, we're getting better at it. So we're going to get more defined on it. So for example, what I mean by that is, you know, in the old fee-for-service world, or the current world that we're in really, you know, the payer really is the one holding the money, right? They have all the cash, they distribute it, and they're the ones paying for care. But as now we have high deductible plans, we have more downloading of the costs to employers and patients, I'm starting to think that that trend is now where patients are going to go, wait a minute, I'm not getting value for my money here. I want the transparency. I want all these things. So to me, the value-based care model is really kind of a model of we've inadvertently downloaded the payment to now a person who's totally interested in getting that better outcome for the dollars that they spend. Whereas before it was kind of invisible. You just sort of paid it into this fund. You paid it in somewhere and then this massive organization distributed it for you. So
yeah, my only thought there though is that I think at least I did, and I think many people in healthcare underestimated the cultural nuance that patients really didn't feel like they were paying for their care. I mean, because all they had to do was pay the copay, and the way the insurance was structured, it created such a mindset and a mentality that was much stronger culturally than I think most of us realized. As we, you know, as that shift happened to high deductible plans, people, even with high deductible plans, that had such a strong mentality that I don't pay for healthcare, I just pay the copay, that then it was really confusing because, oh wait, I got out of pocket costs and high deductible plans and copays and EOBs that match up with this. And they said, what the frick happened to my healthcare? Right? Like I just paid a copay and got whatever services I wanted. And so that became like such a hard mentality. It's been really hard to overcome, I think. And I think I underestimated that. And I think many of us did.
Yeah, no. And you know, that, and then you bring up kind of some interesting dynamics there, because you're right. I think the culture has, it's going to take us a while to get to the point where that voice is heard. I mean, we're just starting to see the beginnings of it. But I think some of the other organizations, you know, will help with that because they are a little bit closer to the patient than maybe traditional healthcare is. And I'm talking about these other players, meaning CBOs, skilled nursing facilities, post-acute care facilities. All these people are part of the value-based chain. And they have always been part of the healthcare system, but they've been sort of ignored, right? Because they were sort of, oh, that was after the acute care episode. It was after the appointment. I think now in the value-based care system, we're going to see some of those players now having to be brought to the table because they do have such an outsized impact on the reimbursement models that are coming up within that VBC kind of model.
Yeah, they have kind of been like the stepchildren, but you know, that's hitting a lot of hospitals in the face when they realize their readmissions are coming from post-acute care and they haven't dealt with it. And you know, they don't have ways to transfer data. They don't, you know, all of those processes, you know, that's hitting a lot of organizations. That's a good observation.
Yeah, no, and I mean, just, you know, and I've only started to dive into this world, and I'm just so surprised at some of the things we find in terms of, you know, the number of readmissions that are going back to the hospital have a high correlation to the fact that they didn't get the full medication list, you know, to the SNF in the first place or to that post-acute care facility. So something as simple as just transmitting data properly can really, you know, can really reduce the number of readmissions, which of course has a huge impact on the value-based care kind of model. So those are some of the players, I think, in value-based care. But in terms of, you know, the next question, John, you know, do you see any IT behavior being driven now by the movement to value-based?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was interesting you brought up kind of that connection between the acute care and post-acute care. You know, I think a lot of acute care looks at it and says, well, post-acute care, step up and start doing it. And the post-acute care are like, I can barely get Wi-Fi into my building, let alone, you know, an EHR, true, which you got $36 billion for and I didn't, right? And, you know, so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, that's one behavior that I think is a challenge, you know, and I'm ready for that world where the acute care starts funding some of the post-acute care technology that will help them, right? So, yeah, I think that will be good. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of different behaviors. I think the one that is most exciting for me is really these communication channels that are opening up. And let me say, it's not the portal, although in a few cases it is, right? Kaiser's done okay with their portal and a few others, but it's often just a simple thing like a simple text message that informs them of their care, informs them of a reminder to do something, informs them of an appointment. And just some of those really are incredibly valuable when they're targeted based on the right data. So if you use the right data and you analyze the right data and then you use text messages as reminders and engagement with the patient, you know, it's amazing how, yeah, and I, you know, how that simple solution provides value. And a part of me is torn and says, wow, man, healthcare is so far behind that data and a text message can solve stuff. But it also says, you know what, maybe we need to stop overthinking stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think some of the IT behavior that I'm seeing is there's now an attention being given to technologies that are more around in truly supporting the patient and engaging them in their own care, whether that's everything from a text reminder to take their medicine to actually, you know, doing some things to help them, stay on the regimen that they're on, help them interpret it, help them do better on it. But those things were sort of nice to haves a few years ago. But now with the value-based care model and the reimbursement is being so tied to it, I think there's definitely more attention and it's changing a little bit of the IT behavior where, in the sense, again, like it was nice to have before and now it's definitely a must-have. I also think, to touch on something I said before, I also think it's opening the doors to data sharing with a purpose now. I think, I mean, we all want to share data, and even the government's mandating it. We had an episode where we talked about that. But I think now where IT organizations and frankly the leadership of organizations are finally realizing, oh, if I just open up my data doors a little bit, I can, there's some value here, and I'm going to get something back for sharing my data. I'm going to get less ED visits if I just share this data with someone else. I think before there wasn't that incentive. It was more, they always hid behind the privacy and security. But now I think with the value-based care model, there's an incentive there, not because they're going to get, just because they're going to make something off the sharing, but it's the return on the outcome. The outcome is going to be that much better. They're not going to come back to the ED, and they're just going to get higher reimbursements or no penalties, sorry.
I also love what they're doing at the bedside in the acute care space. I think there's a lot of really interesting bed technologies, so either built into the bed or even communication platforms that are connected. I saw a recent one implemented with Amazon Echo, with their, Alexa skill. They created a specific skill that allowed the patient to communicate directly with the nurse to be able to say, "Hey, I need to go to the restroom. Can you please come assist me?" I mean, just some simple things like that, so that then the nurse gets the information in a timely manner, is such a powerful thing. And the solutions are so simple now, to be able to do those type of voice interactions. But I think we're seeing it across a wide variety. We're seeing bed sensors that are sensing what's happening in the bed, can help them understand, or oh, are there potential bed sores that are happening, which cause other issues, that if, because there's not enough movement or there's too much movement or whatever, right? It can track those types of things to understand that. Those are other really interesting things. And sometimes it's really just about satisfying the patient and the people, that are giving the care to the patient. I saw a great one out of Hims, where AT&T, which bought DirecTV, for those that aren't following along the acquisitions of corporate giants, but AT&T acquired DirecTV, and they actually announced a service at Hims where they were allowing the patients and their caregivers that were visiting them in the hospital to be able to watch DirecTV on their own device when they're at the hospital. And you're like, well, how does that apply to value-based care? Well, it turns out that happy patients get better quicker. Happy caregivers are more sane and are able to process the information that's coming better. And so if you create a good experience for them, it drives down the costs and it improves the patient experience, which also hits HCAHPS scores, which, we can discuss, is HCAHPS score really value-based care? But either way, it's a revenue driver for a hospital. And so, I mean, these simple things like that, sometimes we just overthink it.
I agree. Hey, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Healthcare IT Today with John Lin, and I'm Colin Hung. And today's episode is brought to you by NextGate.
Yeah, so NextGate is really an awesome organization and really a leading provider of EMPI solutions, all about identity management, making sure you have the right patient matched with the right data. It's just shocking to me how many issues there are in healthcare when it comes to identity management that, increases your revenue, puts patients potentially in harm's way when they have the wrong information attached to them, or their information is attached to someone else, so it's not there for them when they need it. So, and this is actually going to be even more difficult as value-based care models come into play, because it's bringing in more data from different sources. So having a good EMPI solution, ensuring you have the proper identity management, is becoming more and more important for every organization. So take a look at what NextGate can offer your organization. They have both on-premise solutions and a cloud EMPI solution. So check it out at nextgate.com.
Thanks, John. And let's get into question number three. We kind of touched on it a little bit just a minute ago, but what are some of the interesting value-based care technologies that you're seeing emerging now that we are kind of moving towards this new model?
Yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day, we kind of talked about like having a channel for the patient is a valuable thing and a way to communicate with them. And as I look at that, the only way I can see that we can scale that type of communication is through some sort of AI whether it's healthcare chatbots or whether it's some, mix of information and engagement that way. I think the chatbot's the easy one to kind of think about. We're going to need that if we're going to be able to apply it to everyone that's needed, that everyone that needs care, and be able to understand where is the value in the care. Because it's not so much, oh, the patient is coming to me and now I got to deal with it. In a value-based care world, you say, I've got this population of patients. One, I need to know who to do it with, and how do I get that information? Well, I can get it from the EHR, I can get it from an HIE, I can get it from wearable data, I can get it from all of those things. But one of the best ways to get that data is directly from the patient, and a chatbot can go out and gather that information for you, and then you process it on the back end and then prioritize who needs to be seen and who doesn't. So that's the most exciting technology I see, although it's certainly not widespread use. But I think we have to adopt some sort of technology like this to make value-based care real.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited along with you around the application of advanced algorithms, machine learning on population style programs where they're able to do risk stratification, they're able to identify things based on eventually genomics, but today just behavioral patterns, socioeconomic patterns, and go, hey, based on what we have found, we need to enroll you in this program in order to prevent some of these worse chronic conditions from degrading or from even you getting them. So I'm excited about those technologies. I think for, again, for the a while ago, those were nice to haves. They're much more community based, but now there are a lot of well-funded organizations who are taking a look at these technologies because it does affect their bottom line so much in a value-based care world. So I'm excited for those sort of population health type programs and technologies. I'm also excited for some of the new care pathway style or the care navigation style applications where that are really help guide a patient and a physician, frankly, to help make sure that that patient gets the care they need and navigate their own facility or navigate their own system. So it's the everything from automated referral and appointment booking, it's physician matching, it's all these kinds of technologies, and you just have helping, your chatbot's part of it. Just helping a patient navigate to get to the care they need in a timely manner. Because as we all know, if you're able to stick to that, hey, you're supposed to follow up in 2 weeks, you're supposed to come and do this at that time, helping a patient through that, whether it's through communication, through an application, or just through a better process, I'm excited about those technologies because I think those will finally make a difference instead of relying on the patient to do everything.
So it's interesting you say that because I love that they did it. I think it's needed by so many because navigating the healthcare system is such a challenge. It's a hard thing to do. But part of me wonders, like, are we just applying a Band-Aid over a flesh wound, right? Like, should we be creating the technologies to navigate the care system, or should we be simplifying the care system? One side of me says, hey, it's just the way it is, and healthcare is complex, and that we're never going to solve the problem. So the only way to solve the problem is with care navigators. And the other side of me says, no, the care navigator is actually just navigating the complex financial instrument that is healthcare. And if we could simplify that financial instrument, that we wouldn't need those type of technologies, or at least they would evolve into something very different than kind of what you're describing.
Yeah, well, I liken it to, without GPS, which is kind of like these care navigations, we wouldn't have automated cars, right? Self-driving cars. And so, and in some ways, by actually documenting and mapping these processes into an electronic system in this sort of, yeah, it's not ideal. We should be simplifying it. But at the same time, we're not going to be able to change those processes overnight. So let's help the patient at least navigate through it. And once it's in that sort of electronic format, you can kind of go, like, why are there 16 steps here? Like it should be two, and let's simplify this thing. And it takes, unfortunately, it takes this interim step of, okay, let's help draw that really complicated map for somebody, and then let's look at the map one day and go, this is ridiculous, guys. Let's make this two steps.
Well, and you might be highlighting a point. You said you might have been being nice when you said we're not going to be able to do this overnight. The question is, can we do it at all? That's an even more challenging question
Well, and
because
that. Yeah, go
a
ahead.
lot of people make their living off of it.
That's true. That's true. And actually, that's a great segue into the last question that we have to discuss today, John. That is, will we ever get to 100% value-based care? You're having
I
a
wanted to make
blind.
a smart aleck remark and just be like, no or yes. Next slide. I don't know. It's like, I still conjure back to when I heard Farzad Mostashari talk about value-based care and say we can't have one foot in fee for service and we can't have one foot in value-based care. The two don't work together. Which I agree with that idea, and at least it seems challenging to kind of reconcile those two worlds. But I also wonder if the healthcare infrastructure is such that it will ever really fully embrace 100% value-based care. Are we trying to fit a round peg in a square hole and it doesn't fit? I don't know. And also there's just so many complexities around responsibility, for a patient population and what determines that responsibility and what determines the outcome. It gets so complex that I guess I'm skeptical that we'll ever get to 100% value-based care.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, and coming from a system that is based, it's basically universal healthcare. I mean, this is sort of the ideal, regardless of whether who pays, right? But I think for me, I think the reason why I'm skeptical, it's really more of an economic thing. I think there are too many parts of healthcare that are actually transaction based, where value based payment models don't quite work so well. I mean, think about imaging for an example. If I'm just going to go in and get an image from a lab, I mean, the person reading it, yes, does have a little bit of part to play in my overall care, but really it's to fulfill someone else's request for that. And so, is it make any sense to tie that person's compensation or their reimbursement to a value based? I'm not sure, because there, I treated this as certainly as a patient or certainly as a transaction. And what I want there is not so much value based in terms of, hey, can you help me keep me healthy? It's more that I just want price transparency. I want to know that if I'm going to pay $100, this is what I'm getting. That kind of thing, that part of value based care, I think, is the piece that I'm most excited about. And I think that will come into play. But I think to kind of blanket the whole of healthcare into this value based world, I'm not sure all of it fits underneath it.
So let's talk about your Canadian experience a little. Because if you think about it, value-based care should be perfect for the Canadian model where it's single payer. And so, it's interesting to think about why hasn't the Canadian and Italian and most of Europe and a lot of other countries, why haven't they embraced a full value-based care model? Because they're the ones that would really benefit because they're paying for it. So
Yeah,
I don't
no,
know.
and I think the countries that do have single payer models where it's essentially funded by the government and funded by individual taxes, I think there, we'll be able to implement value based components a lot faster because of the single payer fact, not because it's government, because there's a definitely an incentive to prevent people from going from to the hospital or triage them into lower cost facilities than to have them go into the traditional facility. So I think there definitely is more movement in these other countries, and certainly in Canada, there's a movement towards it. But
But it's like if they can't even do it and it's simpler, why do we think we'll be able to do it in the US, right? Like to me, where you have all the incentives aligned in Canada and they still haven't done it. Like, and yet we think we're going to somehow do that here in the US where the incentives aren't even aligned in a lot of cases.
yeah.
That makes me like really skeptical of a lot of it.
Well, and I think the good thing is we're debating this many, many years ahead of where we really should be debating it, because to me the infrastructure still isn't there. I mean, we're just beginning to get the amount of data to be shared and to be available to even do value-based care. Because
That's
when you go out of network, you're lost to that system. How are they even going to track you? Right, all the data that we're collecting on the fitness devices, where is that going today? It's still not all there yet. We still cannot build a comprehensive record to say, are you healthy or not? We're even debating whether that what that really means for individuals,
As
right?
I say, that adds the bigger question, is that even possible? But I
Right.
guess when you start looking at data and analysis, the impossible becomes possible.
Right. And so to me, and I can't remember who said it. I heard it at a conference somewhere, so I apologize for not being attributed properly. But to me, I think the fundamental thing that value-based care is going to bring to the market is really an understanding or better understanding of pricing. How does one, what does $1,000 get me here versus $1,000 get me here? That is a core component, I think, that value-based care will drive us to. And I think that's the most important thing that we can get to, because from there, now people can make an educated decision to go, oh, you know what? I am going to pay $1,000 for this because that'll prevent $10,000 down the road. We never had that available to us before. And as patients and as the public, we didn't know that before. We're only starting to know all this nutritional stuff, right? So I think we're just starting to get to the point where, you know, value-based care can, or that component of value-based care can get its legs and really start to make some changes here in the system.
It highlights a great component. I had this engagement with a doctor who said, why wouldn't you rather go to a primary care doctor than, say, a retail clinic? And I said, well, one, I don't have a primary care doctor, and what would be the difference if I did? And then second was like, how do I know that the primary care doctor is any better than the retail? And so I said, where's the data that does it? It's like, I can guarantee you my experience is going to be more convenient at retail than the doctor, but I can't necessarily guarantee you that this primary care doctor is better than this retail. They might be, and maybe on average they are, but I don't know that guarantee, but I'm guaranteed that I'm going to have more convenience. So I'm going to choose the convenience over some supposed value-based care that might be true, but the data is not there yet, which I think is your point.
Yeah, I think then that's, to me, I think that's why both of us are a little bit skeptical, is I think the ideas are solid. I think the concept, everyone loves it, of course. Even healthcare organizations, I think, are getting behind it. I just think that we're still years away from getting all the infrastructure in place to really make a go of this. So it'll be interesting to see how we progress there. But I think we are making progress, which is sort of the bottom line point.
So the
But I
answer
think
is no.
the answer is no for now. Yeah, we'll debate this again in a few more years, John. On
Not in
episode,
our lifetimes.
that's right. On episode 100, we'll bring this back out and we'll debate it again. All right.
That
Well, thanks to all of you who tuned in to this episode of Healthcare IT Today. For more details about our show, please check out the programs page on healthcarenowradio.com and share your voice and your thoughts with us by engaging in the community at healthcareittoday.com. And of course, on Twitter using the hashtag HITSM. I'm Colin Hung. This is my friend and co-collaborator, John Lin. Thanks for listening and have a great week.